Did you ever get up in the morning, go to the bathroom, it's the first thing I do, and then you look in the mirror because you have to, and you look up and your eyes are bagged up, there's circles under your eyes, your hair is like pointing in every direction possible, your the bottom of your mouth is sagging with drool coming out of it. Your face is all pocked up with pox and holes in them and pimples and things. Your one shoulder is lower than the other. There's a little drip of snot coming out of your left nostril. Never the right one, always the left one. And you look in the mirror and you say to yourself, well, if I comb my hair, if I wash my face, if I took a shower, if you put some makeup on, then I would look fantastic. But then you come to the realization that that's not the way it really is. This, what I am staring at in the mirror, is me. It is me before I do stuff to myself. This is the way I really look. If I were not to do anything to myself whatsoever, this is the way I look. This is honestly, truly what I look like. It defies everything that you thought about yourself. I'm a good looking person, man. Yeah, I got it going. No, you don't. Look in the mirror first thing in the morning. You don't have it going for yourself. You got nothing going. And then you step on the scale. And you always think you weigh something. A certain number you have in your mind. You get on the scale because you had a little pasta last night. Because, my God, you tried to enjoy something that is tasty and luscious. And you wanted spaghetti. You wanted pasta. And you enjoyed it. Twirling that thing around the fork with the sauce dripping off of it and a little bit of cheese on it. That's tasty crap. The next morning, you get on the scale and, oh my God, how did this happen? It must be water weight gain. No, it's not. It's what you weigh. This is how you look. This is what you weigh. Oh my God. It can't be. It is. And then a little bit later, you shower, you wash your hair, you make it look good, straighten it, curl it, whatever it is you do to yourself, you little bastard. You brush your teeth, clean up your skin, put a little makeup on if you're a girl, got to cover up your face so no one knows what you look like, really. Put on some clothes that make you look decent, make you look skinnier, make you look sexy, whatever the case may be. Make you look successful, make you look together. You weren't born with clothes on. Those are accoutrements. They are not really you. They're things that you put on you. No, your true identity is what you look like in the morning when you look in the mirror. That's what you look like. Without any shit put on you. Ron, why are you doing this to us? Why are you exposing us? Why are you making us feel like we are nothing unless we adorn ourselves with something? Because, ladies and gentlemen, it's a reality tour. Life is a reality tour. You are who you think you are. It's a magic trick. It's smoke and mirrors. I have a friend who's married, and his wife will not appear unless she is dressed and has her makeup on and has her hair perfectly worked on. We had a couple's dinner thing, and me and my lovely woman went over to this guy's house and to pick he and his wife up for this dinner reservation. And we got there early. And we ring the doorbell. And the guy comes to the door and he says, "Oh, you're early." I said, "Yeah." He says, "You want to come in?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, where's your wife?" "Oh, she's upstairs." I said, "Oh." "And she won't come down until she's totally ready." "What?" "Yes, she's never seen in public until she is totally made up, totally dressed, makeup on, hair perfectly done. That is her persona. She shall let no one else see her until she looks like that." I said, "How long has this been going on?" He says, "Ron, I'll tell you something. I'll tell you something, Ron. She does not even let me see her until she has fixed herself up in the bathroom." I said, "Don't you guys sleep in the same bed?" "Yes, we do. But she will not expose herself until she is made up, even to me." I said, "Oh my God. Oh my God." Ladies and gentlemen, we are only what we think we are. No less, no more. No less, no more. No more, no less. No less, no more. No more, no less, no less, no less, no more. No more, no less, no more. No more, no more, no more, less, less. No more, less.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird. If you like that sort of thing. Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's Ron Van Dam. Welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. My name is indeed Ron Van Dam. It's a pleasure to be with you on this fine day. Welcome to the weekend edition of the program, which means this runs all through the weekend, and I am so proud of that. Hey, I'm sorry. Once again, I am rude. How are you? Oh, really? Oh, really? Yeah, I do this every single weekday, ladies and gentlemen. Have been doing it for, nearly 30 years now. It's like between 25 and 30, so you say nearly 30. You make it sound better than it is. Or worse. It depends. So, every weekday, I have talked for a period of time. It's my claim to fame. Pitiful, huh? Most people spend their careers inventing things, you know, making life better for people because they cured cancer or something, or at least trying to, or maybe they're a pediatrician and it helped little children get well again who were sick and defiantly horrible, and maybe you've helped out a person somehow, or, you know, maybe you have a job that supplies fantastic things to people all over the world. Me? Not so much. I talk about crap every morning, and I don't. Oh, sure, I've had other jobs in my life. I've been an office manager, a distribution manager for a large company. I've owned my own business, my own wedding videography business, for many years, many, many, many years. Oh, I've done stuff. I've written two books. I'm an author. I eat food. I eat food a lot. I frequently shower. I do that. Sometimes I walk my dogs. That's good for them. I'll water my lawn if it's necessary. Yeah, I do those things. A little bit later in the program, an interesting author who has written a book, which is what authors do. He joined a gang at a very young age and then left the gang and has used that experience to embetter himself and other people by talking about it. It's fascinating as to why he wanted to join gangs. We're going to talk about gang mentality, which may relate to the present political atmosphere. I tried to make the connection. That's coming up a little bit later in the show. That alone would be worth it. But here's the wonderful part of it. Well, I got to think of something. There'll be a wonderful part of it, I guarantee. I just got to figure it out. I don't have much time, do I? You know what? I have a friend. I have a lot of female friends. I have a friend who is considering getting her boobs adjusted. And I have boobs, but they don't really go anywhere. They're man boobs. They're not even man boobs. Man boobs means that you have boobs. I don't have boobs. I have the little nipple things, but I'm flat chested in a way. I don't have boobs, really. I've never thought about that before. But she brought it up, and she was going to have her boobs enlarged. And to which my reaction was, why don't you just get a larger bra? I mean, seriously, man. You know, unless you're sleeping with everybody that you run into, who's going to see your boobs really anyway? You can make your boobs any size you want through enhancement, which is what I was talking about at the beginning of the program. You can enhance your body all different kinds of ways. You can make your boobs larger. You can make your hair fuller. You can make your hair longer with extensions. You can color your hair. You can put on eyebrows and eyelashes on yourself. You can cover your face up with all kinds of creams and ointments and all kinds of crap. You can give yourself a suntan in a split second. It's disgusting, but you can do that. You can whiten your teeth. You can do all kinds of stuff to yourself. You can wear a little corset things around your midriff to suck in your bulbous fat. You can do all kinds of crap to yourself. And you know what? I believe you should. A lot of people say, there's two schools of thought on this. A lot of people say, I am who I am. I look like what I look like. And that's fine. I'm going to present myself to the world exactly as I am. Wonderful. That's great. These are usually vegetarians and things like that. And then there's the people like me that say, what the hell? Make yourself look as good as you can. Make yourself look as young as you can if you care. Do it. I don't care. But Ron, they're phony. What do I care? I don't care. These are accoutrements to me. When I'm walking down the street and I see pretty people, what do I care? I want to see pretty people. Make yourself as pretty as you can for me. I don't care. This is good. What do I care? Ron, do you think I should make my boobs larger? I don't care. Make them larger. I don't care. Why not? Let me ask you a question. Do you want your boobs larger? Well, yes, I do. Then make them larger. Why are you asking me, by the way? Am I the boob master?
Perhaps I am in many ways.
Make yourself look good. What the hell? Why not? Do you realize how short this life is? You don't realize it till you get a little bit older. It's that mentality. When I was in my my older teens and very early 20s, I abused my body. I put everything in it that I shouldn't have, to an extent, not everything. But I thought I would live forever. I thought by the time I hit my elderly age, they will have invented cures for everything. So go for it. You know, eat mounds of butter and stuff. Who cares? Who cares? I feel young and alive and refreshed. Then I got into my 30s and it was, I still don't care, but I got to be a little careful now. When you hit your 40s, all of a sudden, you care. It's like, oh no, oh no. What did I do to myself when I was younger? Oh no. Because all of a sudden you get up in the morning in your 40s and you don't pop out of bed anymore. You don't spring out of bed. You aren't catapulted into your life in the morning in your 40s. You move a little bit and your back hurts a little bit. Your shoulder gets a little stiff. You know what I'm saying? All of a sudden, these little things come popping up here and there. They go away for the most part, but they don't feel real good. Maybe you're sneezing a little too much, or you're gaining a little too much weight all of a sudden. Hey, what is this? I've been skinny all my life. What is this odd little protrusion coming from my stomach? It's fat. You're getting fat. Your metabolism is slowing down. You're not burning the food into energy anymore. It's staying around into fat. It's because you don't feel like moving around as much when you start hitting your 40s. I just want to lay back in my chair. Really? That's when it starts. That's when you start saying, then it's when you look in the mirror. You go, hey, wait a minute. What happened to the hair that used to be over there? Hey, wait a minute. Isn't my hair getting a little thinner than it was? Hey, what's going on? What's happening here? You're aging is what's you're aging. What? Aging? No one told me about this when I was 20. I mean, I guess they told me, but I didn't believe them. I looked great when I was 20. I felt great when I was 20. Now, not so much anymore. In your 20s, your conversation is about, hey, let's party, man. Let's stay up all night and party, man. I got some stuff, man. Let's party. We can put some alcohol in a pipe and we can shove it down our throats, man. Do it till 4 in the morning, man. Yeah, sure, let's do it. Let's stay out all night. Let's have a good time. When you're 40. Now I'm going to bed at 9 o'clock. I'm tired. I'm going to bed at 9 o'clock. Why don't you want a party? No, I don't want a party now. Maybe on the weekend. I don't want a party right now. Conversation kind of changes when you're 40. Hey, Ron, how you doing? How's everything? Oh, good. I'm good. Shoulders hurt today, though. I got a little crazy on the shoulders. Man, the allergies are kicking up. I get allergies every day. You getting allergies, too? Yeah, I know. I went to my doctor, and I have to be careful about what I eat. I got to cut down on the fat and on the sugars and things like that. And how you doing? I'm doing okay. Got the hernia operation last week, and going in for the colonoscopy like I'm supposed to do. What kind of treatment do you have? What kind of stuff do you drink the night before? Oh, it's a powder mixed with Gatorade, and it's pretty good. It's rather mild, and it's not so bad. Yeah, last time I had my colonoscopy, I threw up. I couldn't keep that stuff down. Yeah, the doctor found like 2 polyps. They weren't too bad. They weren't cancerous. Everything's fine. Hey, whatever happened, Ron, with the dermatologist? I said it was nothing. Those are things that just come up at a certain age. It's they're not cancerous either. They're fine and all that kind of stuff. Oh, that's good. That's good. How's your foot? My foot's fine. It hurts a little bit there, and I'm getting a little corn there next to my left foot. You know, it's right. How are you doing there? I'm doing okay. Not so bad, really. I don't know. I got to relax more. The doctor says that I'm exerting myself too much and I should start working out because you know, I'm getting a little flabby and all that kind of stuff and all that. Yeah, that's what the doctor told me too. Yeah, yeah. And I need my shot for shingles. I got to get the shingles shot. Yeah, me too. I had the shingles shot in there. How's your family? Good. Got to look after the parents. They're not doing too well. You know, they're getting older and we have to take care of that stuff. We're thinking of moving them to a retirement home or maybe just a house that has one floor. You know, they don't move up and down the stairs too fast anymore. Yeah, I understand that. Yeah, it's not too... It's a crazy life, isn't it? Yeah, yes, it is. Yes, it is. I'm going to have a salad. Salad is good for me. I think a salad. I'm supposed to eat more salad. You know that? Yeah, salad's good for me, too. Although the fatty dressings, they, you know, just to, even if you have a salad and you have fatty dressings, then they can put weight on you, too. There's a lot of calories in, like, those creamy dressings. I know. Tell me about it. I sat down yesterday, had a salad, and apparently it had like over 1,000 calories. I said, over 1,000 calories for a salad? They said, yeah, you're putting too much stuff in it. It should be just kale and maybe a little bit of oil and vinegar. Yeah, that's what I heard too. I got to cut down on my sugars. No more sodas for me or things like that. You know, that's because as you get older, you know, you can get type 2 diabetes with too much sugar. Yeah, that's what my doctor says, too. Yeah, I know. How's everything else? Is it going well? Yeah, it's going fine. I don't know. Everything's good. Yeah, the wife is, you know, trouble. She's always trouble. She's not happy these days. You know, life is meaningless. That kind of thing. Yeah, I go through that too. I feel that way too. I really do sometimes. Yeah, I know I do. I know I do too. Yeah, I know I do too. I do too. So how's everything else? Good, good. You, how's your good? It's fine, fine. How's your dog? Dog's getting older. You know, the dog's 13 now and wonderful dog. The dog's been a part of my life. How's your dog? Oh, passed 3 weeks ago. I'm so sorry to hear that. Yeah, it was very, very difficult. It was like losing a child. Oh, no, no. How are your children? Well, you know, one of them is, you know, things aren't going too well, lost his job and that kind of thing, and may have to move home for a while. Oh, just when you think you're getting him out of the house. I know. It's very, very difficult. Oh, life is crazy, isn't it? You know, we should get together more and talk. Yes, we should.
Thanks to Metro South Podcasting, now you can get your Ron Van Dam anytime you want, as much Ron Van Dam as you want, any way you like to take your Ron Van Dam. Wow, this is getting really uncomfortable for me to read. Ron, did you write this way on purpose? Did you even read this out loud to yourself to see how it sounds? Yeah, actually, you know, you probably did. Okay, it's the Ron Van Dam Show on Metro South Podcasting. Just go with it.
Do you believe in horoscopes? I don't. I believe you can take qualities that you read in any horoscope and relate it to anybody, anytime. Here's the kind of thing. I happen to be a Scorpio. But if I said I was a Cancer or something like that, or a Capricorn, and then you read something, you'd say, Ron, that's just like you. You have those qualities of the Capricorn. That's amazing. And then I'd say, no, I fooled you. I'm not a Capricorn. I'm a Scorpio. Ha, ha, ha. Now what do you have to say? Well, those qualities do fit a Scorpio. Oh, well, you're crazy. You're getting crazy now. Scorpios are sexual beings, sensitive, intelligent. Yeah, that's me. But it's also a lot of other people who aren't Scorpios. I don't believe that stuff any more than I believe that the stars in the sky, which are really suns, did you know that? That the stars have aligned themselves magically into various characters for our delectation here on Earth. Isn't it weird? Look at Orion the Hunter. wow, it's amazing how those stars, suns, line themselves up. And now, and to do the illustration of a hunter, that is freaky. No, it's not freaky. It's stars that you have assigned a certain shape to in your mind, because that's the way people used to think. I'm sorry. I can't go with that astrology stuff. Astronomy I can do. Astrology I cannot. Doesn't make any sense to me. That being said, let's check your horoscope.
Greetings, fellow planet travelers. Kip Starchild here with your New England Broadcasting Horoscopescape. Let's see what the stars have in mind for you. Aquarius, take a chance on doing something that might leave a mark or a scar. Pisces, your lucky number is 781.57, but don't be off by so much as a decimal, or it means certain death. Aries, dance like no one is watching, because in your case, no one is. You're all alone in this world. Embrace that. Taurus, I have three words for you. Lubricants, lubricants, lubricants. Gemini, get ready for a big surprise courtesy of a shellfish allergy you didn't know you had. Cancer, now is a great time to buy that samurai sword you've been thinking about. The ninjas are closing in. Leo, hi Leo, how are you? Virgo, order the creme brulee, then leave without paying. This will lead to true love and a criminal record. Libra, lucky you, the stars are aligning. Good fortune and prosperity are coming your way, and happiness will... Oh, wait, sorry, I skipped ahead. That's for Scorpio. Libra, make peace with your gods, for your time of reckoning is at hand. Sagittarius, remember that life is a marathon, not a sprint. But in your case, it might not hurt to step up the pace a little. The clock is running. And Capricorn, leave it alone. Stop picking at it, or it won't heal. Try some coconut oil. And that's your New England Broadcasting Horoscopescape. I'm Kip Starchild. Until next time, peace.
Author Tom Scarter joins us now. He's the number one best-selling author of Franchise Savvy and The Magic of Choosing Uncertainty. His background is quite interesting. Tom, you were just a normal 10-year-old kid, I understand, and wanted to be normal, and then all of a sudden you had a different desire.
Yeah, Ron, that's so true. I lived in New York, and don't hold that against me.
I know. Where were you? I'm from New York.
Okay. I was born and raised in Brooklyn.
Oh, okay. I was in Teaneck, New Jersey, and then moved to the city. But go on. So I'm clicking with you. I'm clicking with you. Go on.
Yeah. So, so in my neighborhood there was a guy we used to call him Mike the Bike, and he had this old Harley chopper, and he just impressed the heck out of me, and I just wanted to be like him when I grew up. So at 10 years old, all my friends wanted to play for the New York Yankees. But I wanted to be a Hell's Angel.
Huh. Interesting.
Even at an early age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what drove you in that direction of wanting to fulfill that?
You know, it's interesting when I think about it now, because it's so many years ago, right? I'm in my 50s now, but it's being a young kid and seeing that everybody had like a visceral reaction to seeing this guy coming down the block. I was like, wow, this is cool. This guy gets a lot of attention. And, you know, then you start reading psychology books and, you know, psychology 101 in college. And I realized that, you know, I was seeking like my mother's attention somehow by, you know, growing my hair long and getting tattoos.
Yeah.
And then getting, you know, doing everything against society. And, you know, I quit college and joined the motorcycle club in New York City in Brooklyn. And, yeah. And kind of went down that road, down that subculture.
Okay, so and what I so then you kind of figured out what gangs are about, because I know that at a point you had left that, and then you became kind of a motivational kind of person for other people. Why did you actually leave the gang atmosphere?
Well, you know, I got into it kind of by accident. I was just hanging out. You know, you hang around, you know, whatever you are, you kind of attract those kind of people to you.
Yeah.
And so here I am riding this old 1947 Harley chopper and hanging out in biker bars, and I met a couple of guys, and one thing led to another, and I met this club and kind of just fell into it, and the stories go deep in my book that I'm actually currently writing, which is A Life Lesson from a Motorcycle Gang. You know, I talk more deeply about it. But for the sake of time, I kind of got sucked in, and I wanted to get in because I thought it was all about, you know, drinking beer and partying and riding motorcycles and having a good time. But then I realized the guys that I was hanging around with were really into kind of a lot of violence, and I wasn't a violent guy.
Really?
And I was more like a lover. I wasn't a fighter.
Yeah.
And I realized, you know, I was in it, and once you're in it, you really can't get out. There's really only two ways out, death or jail, you know. It's kind of like the mafia in a lot of ways. But you know things about these folks, you know, that nobody else knows.
Huh.
And so I realized that this life was not for me, and I wanted to, you know, be a regular guy. I wanted to, you know, just get married. Sometimes, like, when you hear celebrities, when they make it rich and famous, they realize, man, I just wish I had a job and I was a regular guy and I could have a regular life.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't have a regular life. I couldn't just go into a restaurant and just have a, you know, be a normal guy, because I really stuck out like a sore thumb. And in a way, it was kind of like being a celebrity, where, you know, we would be, you know, drinking beers on the street in Greenwich Village and people would be asking to take pictures with us.
Oh, interesting.
And that was part of the draw for me as well.
Our lay impression of being in a gang would be people that are maybe somewhat lost, that want to be accepted by a social entity.
That's right.
And then you can even take that and go further with this ISIS thing. Is that not just a religious gang?
Wow, you know, man, that's insightful.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, we talk about that a lot. I work with a guy by the name of Scott Mann. He's a former Marine and Green Beret. He was over in Afghanistan, you know, dealing with everybody over there, and he came back. He wrote a great book about how to deal with this ISIS issue and really terrorism in general. Colonel Scott Mann, and you should check out his book. And really, what he talks about there is that talking to these folks, you know, they're not on the same level as us. They're thinking like barbarians.
Right.
They're not thinking about, I'm going to sue you and I'm going to call my lawyer. That's
right.
The way we think,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to talk it all out. These guys are not into talking. They're all into a you know, an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's how gangs are, very barbaric. You know, you stepped on my turf.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You insulted me. I look bad in front of everybody. Now I have to do something to you to prove that I'm a man.
Wow.
And that's how ISIS operates. That's how gangs operate. Very,
yeah.
You know, it's funny because I was doing a speech about this gang life, and Scott Mann was in the audience, and afterwards that's how we met. Came up to me, he's like, wow, we need to collaborate.
Interesting. Because
what you're talking about gang life is exactly what I'm talking about in terrorism organizations.
And let's take it another step further and tell me if you agree, is there not a politics kind of application to this, where perhaps a politician or someone running for president or something would be like acting tough and saying, if you feel you're alone and you're not loved, then come into my tough area and no one steps on our toes, and if you do, I'll step on yours. Is there a connotation there too?
I guess you could draw that out in a lot of what's going on today in our, you know, one of the best political races of our lifetime, I think. Yeah. Especially if you like situation comedies, that's what it's like.
I know.
But when you got somebody, you know, you got one person saying, "Hey, if you feel shut out and your wages are low or you can't get a job, come with me because I'm going to help you do all that. I'm going to solve that problem." So I guess you're, and the other guy saying, "If you're not safe, we're going to build a wall. So come inside my wall."
Yeah.
So, you know, I think the way you draw out that logical conclusion into politics probably makes a lot of sense. I never thought about it. Yeah,
especially the mentality of if you attack me, I'll attack you back worse than you can even imagine. It's the same kind of, talking about the eye for an eye thing. And then you took it a step further, which I find also extremely fascinated, beyond even what's fascinating here, is that you take that into the business world, where the business world is also somewhat of it's an endeavor where you need to conquer and to bring people in. And I guess some things can be applied there in perhaps a good way.
Yeah, it really is. But if you think about it, what a company really wants to build is loyal followers.
Right.
It could be the religion of, you know, Apple, the religion of Microsoft.
Yeah.
It could be the religion of Amazon. I mean, we have, so you want to wear their shirt. You want to wear their logo.
Yeah.
You know, it's, if you could build a fanatic group and have employees like that, I mean, if you think about it, one of the things I talk about in my book is that one real paramount thing for a motorcycle gang is their logo, right? They call it the colors. So it's the patch you wear on your jacket. And you guard that with your life. It's so sacred that you have it tattooed in your skin if you're a real badass, right?
Yeah.
So imagine if you had a brand where people were so loyal that they would get it tattooed and, you know, get your logo tattooed on their body. I mean, that is the ultimate in branding, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I learned a lot about how gangs and how we kept the brand loyalty so ingrained in our culture day in and day out in the gang, and I draw that out into business. It's an amazing, you know, like, I don't know if anybody ever thought about it like that, but, you know, coming from where I come from, that's what I see.
Well, I mean, your first example of Apple was very interesting because, yeah, you do start wearing their clothing and you do... you do go for their mentality. It's kind of interesting how that becomes very encompassing. You stand online to get their product. I guess that's the goal is to indeed encompass you.
Yeah, and it's the same thing with the gang. It's all about, you know, this is who we are. This is what we stand for.
Yeah.
Come in and we'll take care of you. You know, just drink our Kool-Aid instead of the other guy's Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Interesting. Very much like politics.
Very interesting. But, I mean, in some aspects, I guess, organizations can do good when they bring people in. It's just if they indicate to you that we're going to replace your family, then I guess that's not a good clue.
But, well, that's when it becomes pathological.
Yeah.
And... Yeah. You know, in our little thing, you know, we always try to keep family involved.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even like if you ever watch any of the old, you know, gang movies, whether it was The Godfather or Goodfellas,
mm-hmm.
they always talk about, you know, you got to be a family guy. You always have to have family. That's the most important thing.
Right, right.
And it's still true. I mean, even in the gang, we had family picnics and, you know, we have pictures of kids on motorcycles and things like that.
Yeah.
It is still part of that culture. So it doesn't go to the point where it becomes a cult.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the next step a little bit. And, you know, that might be more like ISIS, where you're picking up and moving to Syria or wherever the training camps are these days, and you're leaving everything behind and, you know, you join a cult like, you know, Charles Manson's family or something. That's a little bit more than what I am talking about in a gang.
I got you. Yeah, it becomes psychotic, yeah. You can do that on your own. You don't need a gang to be psychotic.
I guess,
I suppose. So you're
right, Yeah. You could just run for president.
Hey, that apparently works for, they think it works for some people. I don't know. So, but your lure originally was indeed the love of motorcycles, and it may be a little bad boy in there somewhere, but I mean, you legitimately loved Harleys, right?
Yeah, it was started from an early age, and it was just, I loved the old style choppers with the long front ends and the high handlebars and the kind of stuff that you would see even on like the old TV show Sons of Anarchy. And you know, I just love the, you know, and it's become an art form, especially with the past 10 years with the various TV shows on cable, like Orange County Choppers and things like that. And I actually have books on the art of motorcycles. You could go to museum exhibits on these old Harley choppers. They actually show them as pieces of art.
I got you.
And so they were. And a motorcycle, you know, when you're kind of in it, in that subculture, a motorcycle is really part of the family.
Yeah.
Everybody knows its history. It shows up in photos in the family album. It has a place, you know, where it takes its naps, you know, in the garage. And everybody knows where it is. And everybody knows what's happened to it. And, you know, a really good biker knows when it's not feeling well, right? You could feel that the vibration of that engine is not right. And you could hear it not right. And even to this day, even though I don't ride motorcycles and I fly planes instead because that's more dangerous. But, just the other day we were driving on the highway and I heard this Harley coming up behind us and I was like, something is wrong with this guy's engine. And as he passed us, in the left lane, you could see all this white smoke coming out. I was like, he has an oil leak. He has an engine leak.
So you have a love of the item, as many people do working on cars. I mean, I get that. That's a book that you're working on now. Do you have anything in your mind release date wise or how far along this is?
You know, I'm the kind of person that, like, when I'm in the mood, I'll write a couple of chapters.
Mm-hmm.
I hope to get it out probably in this time next year. Probably in a year, I'll get it out on shelves or on Amazon. I have two other books out there that really, one is just totally, you know, my stories about the pros and cons of franchising and, you know, owning a business, the lessons I learned, the mistakes I made, all that stuff. And then one is called The Magic of Choosing Uncertainty, which is really kind of a labor of love, where it's really all about making, you know, every life decision that we have, Ron, is the choice between uncertainty or unhappiness.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to work with people to choose that uncertainty, because that's where the magic happens.
Yeah, it seems like the road, the way that you describe it with your background and being the entrepreneurialism is everybody makes mistakes, and if you don't try, you have to make mistakes when you're trying, but the trick is to learn from the mistakes that you made. I guess that seems to be the running thread here.
Yeah, it's definitely learning from your mistakes. Be willing to take a chance. Mm-hmm. If you don't take a chance, you'll never achieve anything. You'll have no. You know, I read something years ago by Jim Morrison, the guy from the rock band The Doors.
Yep.
Those people that don't know that music.
I know. Isn't it interesting that you actually have to explain that now?
it really is. You know, what's the old joke? It's like Paul McCartney was in the band before Wings.
Yes, oh my goodness,
I didn't know that.
That's freaky. Go on.
Yeah, it's
crazy. Yeah. All right.
You know, I read that thing with Jim Morrison said, is your life enough to make a movie about?
Mm-hmm.
And I always had that idea in the back of my mind. And I realized that at the end of the day, you know, as we all know, we're here for a microsecond in world history.
Yeah.
And, you know, what do you got to lose, really? And we're so brought up with fear. You know, the last thing your mom always said to you when you were leaving the house is, be careful, right? Yeah. So you went through your whole life being careful.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's sad. And then we wake up one day, we have a midlife crisis. I call it a midlife awakening.
Yeah.
And you're like, man, I don't like what I'm doing. I got to do something different.
Yeah.
And, you know, people get divorced and all sorts of stupid things happen because they don't understand why it's happening.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's great. It's fascinating talking to you. The books are Franchise Savvy and The Magic of Choosing Uncertainty, and there's another baby in the oven. I mean, that's not the title. I mean, I'm just saying.
There's another baby in the oven, and the working title now is The 5 Lessons Learned from Being a Member of an Outlaw Motorcycle Gang.
Oh, cool. If you want to visit him and follow him, his website is tomscarda.com, TOMSCARDA.com, and you'll always find something interesting going on there. Hey, it's been a pleasure speaking to you, Tom.
Thank you, Ron. This has been a pleasure for me, my honor.
Good. I look forward to speaking to you when we get close to the book release.
I definitely will let you know and we'll talk about it.
Cool. For sure. Pleasure. You take care.
Be well. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Cute. Adorable. Hey, have yourselves a wonderful day. I do wish you peace. Be with you next time.